the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So still banging around Monday night's debate because so much is there. I mean, you know, we're talking about the future of the country, and I know a lot of my Democratic friends are up. Hey, we've won. No, you haven't really won yet. November's a long way off. A lot can happen over that time period. And, you know, what's interesting to me is I think a lot of my elite liberal friends have forgotten that there are really a lot of struggling, hurting people out there. And as someone who grew up in the Midwest, I watched the deindustrialization of our country happen right before my eyes. Cleveland was an industrial powerhouse at one time. And, you know, not just our trade deals, but you go back to Reagan's high dollar policy. You go back to the 60s when the auto industry wanted out of the country. There's been this push by corporate America to seek cheap, exploitable, not just labor, but environmental regulations as well. And that really has harmed the middle class and the working class in those Midwestern states. So I thought it'd be an interesting idea to talk with our good friend Peter Van Buren, who has written a piece on this very topic about, you know, why Trump may win Ohio and Pennsylvania. He's the author of Ghosts of Tom Joad, A Story of the 99%. He also wrote the book We Meant Well. Peter, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure, Rick.
So I look at this and I got a lot of people, a lot of emails from people saying, you know, the debate, you know, basically sealed Trump's fate. It's going to be almost impossible for him to win. And I'm going, hold on. I live in central Pennsylvania. I see the Trump signs everywhere. Let's not wrap this up already.
You know, I watched the debate and basically was trying to figure out cheap tickets to Canada or Mexico as my best go-to move, because I think in terms of working people, I'm not certain either candidate really has their best interests in mind. But let's step back from that and just try to examine this as dispassionately as we can. Like you, I grew up in Ohio outside of Cleveland in the 70s when the unions were powerful and the jobs were there, and then watched it fall apart during the 80s and 90s. And so I bring that perspective to this. I think that Trump has a very good chance of winning Ohio and Pennsylvania. And if he does, that puts him very close to the electoral count that he's going to need to actually beat Clinton and take over the White House. We also see him ahead in Florida and running very close in some other battleground states. The reason I think that Trump still appeals out in the what we now say without irony is called the Rust Belt, is that he's speaking to an awful lot of people who know they've been screwed by the system, who look around them and see the drug problem and see the people who want to work but can't find jobs, the people who used to be quite proud of feeding their families now having to go to food banks and take food stamps, and they want easy solutions to complex problems. And that's what Trump is offering.
Yeah,
he's out there saying it's not your fault. It's the fault. And certainly there's truth in all of this. But he's saying it's the trade agreements. It's the Chinese. It's the Mexicans. It's those bureaucrats in Washington. It's the Muslims. It's everybody and anyone in terms of trying to hand these easy solutions to focus that unfocused anger in votes for himself.
Right. And the anger is very real. I mean, the anger is very real. And it's not just, it just doesn't come with loss of jobs, Peter. It comes with loss of identity. And I've seen people when the factory has closed down and their jobs have gone away. It's like ripping their soul out. It's not just a job. It's who they were.
Absolutely. I spent some time not too long ago in Weirton, West Virginia, which is not too far from Steubenville and down the river from Pittsburgh. And, you know, Weirton in many ways is one of the archetypal towns. There was a single industry there. They made steel. And the town essentially grew up around the mills, and they took away the mills and they left the people there. Folks are angry. They don't know what happened to them. It's difficult, I think, for folks there to understand how these massive tides of history, the stuff that was done behind their backs in Washington, you know, translated into the fact that they have nothing to do, that their self-worth was taken away, that they are meant to consider themselves lucky if they're getting minimum wage at a Walmart that opened outside town that sells stuff that was made somewhere else. And Trump knows this. He senses it almost like a predator smells prey. And he travels out to these areas and says, I can fix this. I can bring the jobs back.
Sure, like any good con man. I mean, like any good con man, he knows the right what people want to hear, and he's feeding them the red meat. But the sad thing is, Peter, is I look at this, and you know, the red meat is there, and look, I've been screaming about this for 11 years on the air now. What he's offering though as solutions is not there. So I understand the anger. It's not irrational. It's very palpable. It's something that if it were to happen to me, I would be just as angry. But what they're offering they're not offering anything. I mean, that's the weird thing.
And, you know, you turn to the other, it's candy, it's air, it's what people want to hear. And that's always been a very effective tool to manipulate folks. As you said, any con man on the street knows that. And I'm afraid that Trump has internalized that process. I suspect if you and I were to actually hold him down and you know, waterboard him or something, I think he even believes some of this stuff. I don't know that it's quite as cynical as saying, well, he's figured out the right words and which buttons to push. I think he does believe a lot of it, but it isn't true. And just wanting it to be true, whether that's the unemployed steelworker or the guy who used to build cars in my old town of outside of Cleveland, wanting it to be true doesn't make it true.
Right.
And folks should be very, very careful about someone promising them things without giving them a lot of specifics, without explaining how he's going to bring those jobs back. A vote for Trump is a very difficult choice to make if you're sitting there looking at 20 or 30 years of economic decline all around you and expecting that to get fixed.
Yeah, not just, you know, because he has no plan, but because honestly and truthfully, Washington is broken. Because as a society, we're broken. I mean, you know, we see different realities. I just had a conversation with a guy yesterday who started the conversation off with me, who said, you know, Hillary Clinton's the devil and you're never going to tell me anything different. And you go, you know, how do you unite a country when you have polar opposite versions of the sky is blue?
Yep. And I think it's important to stress, because my politics is quite mixed up this election cycle, and I'm at the point where I'm not sure who to support or what to support. So currently I'm not supporting anyone. And I just want to stress, though, that criticizing Trump does not mean you're supporting Clinton. And vice versa. You have to be very careful about equating, you know, support for criticism of one for support for the other. We need to pull back and look at each person objectively and maybe come to the conclusion that neither of the two is really going to be working in our interests.
And I agree with you on that. I was a Sanders guy from the start. I mean, even before Sanders announced, I was saying, I want Sanders in the race. I think he can win. I think he's the best person. I think he would move us in the right direction, at least to use the bully pulpit in a way that would help grow the middle class and help recover some of our economy. But at the end of this, I look at Trump as dangerous. I mean, did you watch his foreign policy kind of ramblings and the idea of his fingers on the nuclear codes scares me to no end?
It's hard to disagree with you. He is not a smart person. And we can call him the demagogue and a liar, and all those things are quite true. But I think the thing that in the end is most frightening is he's not very smart. He doesn't know his way around these issues, even in the crudest form. And that opens him up to manipulation, both by forces within our own government who have an agenda, And by foreign leaders who are going to figure out where his buttons are and push them.
Yep.
If the person in the White House is not very smart, then someone's going to do to him what he's trying to do to us, play the long con. And one day you'll wake up and say, hey, what happened around here? without really understanding it's been a car wreck in slow motion.
Yeah, I mean, I look at his comments on temperament, and I go, really? After you went from orange to red over a couple of questions by Lester Holt, who he just got back from the concession stand, or Hillary, who I didn't think was all that attacking, if that is going to get under your skin, wow, that's something to be concerned about.
Exactly. And the other thing is that even though, you know, the candidates talk a lot about going, you know, toe-to-toe with Putin or whatever, I don't hear them ever talk about anything other than you know, negotiating with Putin. There's a big world out there. And a lot of what the president has to do is not quite as dramatic as you know, showing it down with Putin or throwing down with the Chinese. It involves very meticulous preparation. It involves some of the slow processes of diplomacy and negotiation. And it requires an attention to detail. Because when you sit down to negotiate, for example, some form of trade deal, you've got to sweat the details. And someone has to say, Mr. President, here are our negotiating points. Here's what we'd like. Here's what's our can't cross this line points. And, you know, we're going to do some horse trading with country X, because you can't just go in there and say, here's what I want, take it or leave it. That's not how reality, that's not how the world works.
Well, maybe in Trump's world, that is how it works, though. And that's what's concerning to me. No, this isn't just a knock on Trump. It's kind of a knock on that CEO mentality. They're used to being the king, the dictator, the one at the top of the heap, ordering things to be done, and they better be done or heads are going to roll. Governments don't work that way.
No, we'll take the kindest possible explanation for how government works, and we'll call it cooperative. you know, CEOs, they order things. They're like generals. They say, do this, do that, and that's it. The president has to play a critical role as a negotiator inside the country. Trump or Clinton is going to face a very divided Congress and absolutely a divided nation. He or she is going to have to figure out ways to get all sides to work together, or nothing will ever get done. And it's possible nothing will ever get done, but choosing a man who has demonstrated an utter lack of that ability seems like a really bad place to start.
I'm with you, but do you think it's possible that we can come back together? I mean, I go back to the conversation I had yesterday where someone starts off with, Obama's a Muslim, Hillary's the devil, Democrats are evil, liberals are stupid, and that's the starting point of having a conversation with somebody, and you expect this is something positive to come out of that. I just don't know how we can come back together.
It's the difficult thing. I mean, you're talking here about small steps. There's certain people, the caller you refer to, I mean, you're never going to get through to that person, and that's that. But you're talking about small steps. You try to identify commonalities, things that most people can agree to most of, and you start there. You may not get very far. I mean, this is a huge problem. It's taken us years of animosity to get into the pit we're in right now.
Yep.
We're not going to crawl out in anybody's first term, but we can make some progress here and there. We can take a start, but that's going to take a leader who's very, very dedicated to that process and willing to invest some of his or her resources and some of their popularity into that process. I can't see Donald Trump doing it.
I don't see Trump being that guy. I see Hillary giving more because she's a centrist corporate Democrat. Some of her rhetoric during this campaign so far has pushed her further to the left because of the Sanders push and the need for millennials, because she talked about debt-free college, which is something that was front and center during the Sanders year. And I actually had someone tell me the other day that debt-free college would be horrible for the country and listed a whole bunch of reasons why we need to saddle the next generation with massive debt. And I just remember walking away going, you know, I don't know what this guy, what he's on, but I wish he would get off of it.
I have an article up today, actually. It's funny you mention that, on my blog, wementwell.com. There's the commercial. But I think it's still worth looking at. I actually am responding to a serious piece by a military veteran saying that free or low-cost tuition is going to hurt our military. Because right now, we're basically holding middle-class and lower-class people hostage, saying, you know, the only way you're going to be able to go to college is either to take on crippling debt or join the military and use the GI Bill. So you might as well just join the military and hope for the best. Now, join the military if that fits your goals and that's what you want to do. But the idea that if we offer a better deal on college to people who don't want to join the military, that we're going to cripple our national defense, that raises some very, very dark questions about who we are as a nation, what our priorities are, and what we think of our own people.
Right, and who fights our wars, and how easy it is for the Trump rhetoric to get us into this stuff. Because I can't tell you how many Trump supporters are like, oh, we should just go over there and nuke and flatten the whole Middle East and get rid of them all. And I'm going, well, I don't think Russia would be all that upset about you doing that, but who's going to do it? And the reality is it's our poor. It's the working class of this country.
That's right. That's who dies in these wars. The people who go through the ROTC programs, they're the officers, the people who don't have to die. I was in Iraq for a year. I saw it very, very clearly. I saw who got the crap jobs, who got the frontline jobs, who, you know, went through the door first. And it was, unfortunately, disproportionately people of color and people who are coming from lower backgrounds who you know, maybe didn't get the chances they needed, the education they needed, and they ended up as the cannon fodder. It's great to sit there and say, let's go get them. It's harder when you are thinking it's going to be, you know, my son or my daughter. And it's even worse when you think your son or your daughter, you know, might be worth sacrificing for something like that.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I remember when the military recruiter came to my house and my grandfather went ballistic and threw him off the porch, basically, because he said, he says, if you join the military, I'll kill you myself. Because he said, look, at the end of the day, GI stand. You know what GI stands for? He said, government issue. If it comes between you and a tank, kiss your bye and goodbye. And, you know, we see this played out, and you're absolutely right. It says a lot about who we are as a country. So last question I've got for you in looking at Monday's debate, what should we take away from that? I mean, if you could wrap that up into, you know, just a kind of a thought, you know, everyone's saying Hillary won other than the Trump people who said the snap polls are theirs.
Yeah.
What do we take away from that?
You look at it in isolation, you know, the single hour and a half that we saw there. I mean, Hillary looked really good. She looked very strong. She had her. She did her homework, and she didn't make Trump look particularly presidential, to use that term. I think the one thing that everyone should consider carefully is that we did get, I feel, a very good look at both candidates. I don't think anybody can claim we didn't see the real Trump or the real Hillary up on that stage. And in that regard, maybe we're all a little better equipped to make our choices as voters. Think carefully about what you saw and what you heard, and I think that may be guidance for people going forward here.
Yeah, I wish there would have been a third candidate up there. I wish they would have had...
Absolutely.
I wish, even if Stein and Johnson didn't poll where they claim they wanted them, I still think having those other voices there would have been something beneficial.
And we sure as hell could have used you as a moderator to redirect some of these questions back to issues that affect ordinary Americans and not some gobbledygook that we got lost in the weeds about Rosie O'Donnell and everything else up there.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. I don't know why that came up. There were so many other things that there should have been. Because like we've been talking about, working class families in this country are truly struggling, and the anger is something very real. Peter, I appreciate you taking some time for us. I'd love to have you come back and talk to us again.
I think we've got a lot to say between now and the election.
Absolutely.
I'd be happy to join you again.
Thanks so much, Peter Van Buren, author of Ghost of Tom Joad. You can pick that up. I think Amazon's got it, but wementwell.com is the website. I'm sure there's a way to get it there. We'll get links at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You know I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watch you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.